So I'm going to switch the focus a little bit off of hydraulic fracking fluid and all of that to more of the above ground impacts of natural gas development. We're looking mostly at disturbance effects on soil properties and how to better reestablish vegetation after disturbance. So I'm going to briefly summarize the study that we did, just quantifying effects of disturbance in some of these natural gas well pads in Wyoming, and then I'm going to also summarize a two-year field study trying to improve soil properties after disturbance. And we're looking mostly at sodium-affected soils with this study. So just as some background, Wyoming has a lot of energy production, but one of its major sectors is in natural gas. Wamsutter, Wyoming is located where the triangle is, and it has a ton of sweet gas. And in the early 2000s, there was a lot of easily reached production, and now a lot of those well pads are being reclaimed. So they're looking to reestablish vegetation on those sites. BLM is sort of the monitoring entity, and mostly they're looking for restoring ecosystem services like wildlife habitat and grazing. And just some of you probably are really familiar with how well pads are constructed, but in this area, they typically remove all the vegetation in 15 to 30 centimeters from the soil surface, stockpile that, and then stockpile any subsurface material separately. And after, 1 to 5 years, they put the subsoil back and then the topsoil back on top and seed and till in the fall. And a lot of times after this process, they end up with saline conditions and or soda conditions on these well pads. And this prevents plant germination in some places. Saline conditions are much more common, but soda conditions are probably the most difficult to reclaim and reestablish vegetation on. So that's what we were particularly interested in, is why are plants not successful on these sites especially. And the study area gets about 18 centimeters of water a year, which is highly variable, so from 1 year to the next, it really just depends, but overall, an 18 centimeter average. Really red soils, high clay content. I think on both sides it's over 40%, one was about 52% clay. Lots of nature horizons and BK horizons in this area, high pHs, so very much a desert soil. And so this is just a graphic summary of the first paper that I mentioned on the effects of disturbance on some of these soil properties. Typically, you start off with a soil profile like on the left, where you have a thin 3-centimeter A horizon, a salty or clayey or some sort of B horizon within 10 centimeters, or actually 5 to 10 centimeters it starts, and then the subsurface material, which is usually pretty salty and clayey as well. And then they come in, they strip off the top 15 centimeters, put it in one pile, and then anything below that in another pile. And when they redistribute that topsoil pile, you have an increase in salts, sometimes an increase in sodium, it depends, increase in clay oftentimes, and a drastic decrease in your soil organic matter, both because it's oxidized and because it's been diluted with other sort of unfavorable material. And I wanted to also just mention some other soil properties that we found. We saw a 60% decrease in saturated hydraulic conductivity on these sites. Its carbon content was about 2 to 2.5 grams of carbon per kilogram, so pretty low, and the ESPs were over 30 on one of the sites. And this is sort of another side of that story of disturbance. This is aggregate distributions. Dry aggregate distributions, and so we're looking at how some of these losses in organic matter and increases in clay and increases in salt have affected soil structure. And you can see the two most interesting parts of this, I think, if you look at the striped area and the tan area, those two together are the larger than 2 millimeter aggregates. So on these sites, they're typically clods, and I'll show you a picture of what I mean by that, but they're very dense, sort of rocky clay chunks. They're not exactly stable, healthy aggregates. And then we're also losing a lot of microaggregates, as you can see on the black sections. In some cases, we're losing half of our stable microaggregates, which are where your nutrients are stored, your soil organic matter, and your microbial biomass has a lot to do with microaggregates. And just as a side note, you see in the disturbed soils, the striped and the tan sections, almost all of the soil falls into these two size categories. But when we did water-stable aggregate distributions, only about 10% of them were stable in water. So they're big clods that are just subject to flaking and dispersion. And this is just another way that these salt conditions are affecting aggregate distributions. As you increase salt or sodium concentration, you typically are seeing less stable microaggregates in water. And this is what I meant by the clods. You can see on the left, that's the undisturbed, sort of nice flowery soil surface. And after it's disturbed, you get these big chunks of clay, salty, not fun soil. And so our two-year field study was trying to use some amendments to reclaim these soil properties, and there are some restrictions on how you can do this. You can't, for example, spray sulfuric acid on some of these sites because that's a safety hazard. And you also are not going to be able to irrigate on these sites. And typically, they want to just apply amendments once and be done with it. And so we were looking at amendments with that sort of filter of how we can do things efficiently but also adhere to industry standards. So we chose gypsum because it's well-known, it's well-used or widely used, and also very cost-effective, but it has been criticized for its low solubility in water. Elemental sulfur was an alternative to sulfuric acid, which tends to be pretty effective, but this one is much safer to apply in the settings that we're looking at. And langbeinite, also known as KMAG, is a sulfate mineral that's sort of similar to gypsum in a sense where the magnesium and potassium are going to displace sodium on the exchange, but it's much more soluble than gypsum. And we added compost just to try to replace some of the organic matter that was lost. And so the objectives of this field study were to look at these amendments under field conditions, so no supplemental water, just natural rainfall, for 2 years. And we were particularly interested in how these amendments would affect soil structure, because that's one of our main losses with the sodic issues. We also just looked at some of the native soils next to the well pads to see how things were changing, but I don't think we're really going to talk about that here. And so how we did the study, before we applied treatments, we took samples in all the plot areas just to get baseline values for where things were at. Our treatments were compost alone, gypsum, gypsum plus compost, langbeinite, and langbeinite plus compost, a control, a sulfur, and a sulfur plus compost. And we had two sites, one was saline sodic, which had an EC of about 9 and an ESP of about 38, and a sodic site, which had an EC less than 0.5 and an ESP of, I think, 25. And so these plots were 7 by 7 meters. You can see that there is space in between each plot. And then this is before the amendments were incorporated. A guy came through with a tractor after we were done hand applying all this stuff. And then we went back in June 2013 and 2014 and took samples at two depths to analyze a suite of soil properties. And those properties were, we did dry and water-stable aggregate distributions to look at soil structure, bulk density, EC and pH, pretty standard stuff, salt cations, root biomass, and then we tried to look at vegetation counts and surface CO2 flux at the end. And so at the end of 2 years, we did not find a significant treatment effect on ESP or sodium, but we did see some other results, and I'll talk a little bit about that treatment effect on sodium later. We saw increased calcium under gypsum treatments, increased magnesium under langbeinite treatments, and that's pretty expected because those amendments contain those cations. A little bit lower pH under the gypsum plus compost and the langbeinite treatments. And then I'm going to talk about the results, the treatment effects on aggregate distributions, but before I did that, I just wanted to reiterate why some of these classes are more important than others. So we typically want a nice, even balance of aggregate distributions. If you have too many macroaggregates, which are those clods that I was talking about, sort of greater than 2 millimeters, you're going to lose a lot of your nutrient and water retention. Microaggregates are important for nutrient storage, and this last bullet, the less than 53 micrometer class, it's typically silt and clays that are unaggregated. So whenever we talk about those, we're looking mostly at dispersion. And I'll try to reiterate that as we go through some of these graphs. This is treatment effects on the clod size classes. So greater than 2 millimeters, we see there are less of these clods under the lanthanide and lanthanide plus compost treatments. And this was in this is 1 year after treatment. Here we're looking at dry microaggregates. So under lanthanide and lanthanide plus compost, we're seeing more microaggregates than other treatments. And then the gypsum treatments are sort of intermediate. They have a little bit more than the control, which is N. And here's that dispersed soil I mentioned. We want less of this. We want more of our soil to be in stable aggregates instead of, you know, passing through this really fine sieve. And so here we're seeing that lanthanide and lanthanide plus compost, and also gypsum looks like, did a pretty good job of preventing that dispersion and the soil passing through that finest sieve at the 0 to 5 centimeters. And then, so we know that lanthanide is somewhat improving soil structure, but there's also trade-offs with that. When you apply this amendment, it definitely increases EC across the board. And so if our goal is plant germination and reestablishment, we might be making it a little bit more difficult for these germinating seedlings, even if we are improving soil structure due to sodium. And overall, the biology on these sites was sort of hard to capture. There were no treatment effects on root biomass, CO2, or vegetation in 2 years. We expect that there would be, past this point, there was more organic matter under the compost treatments, which was expected. And let's see. So going back to that original treatment effect on sodium, we expected, you know, lanthanide to leach the most sodium, but we didn't see any treatment effects. And we think that this is just because there wasn't much water provided in 2 years. And when it was provided, it was in very small volumes, not much for leaching of salts. And also, the potential evaporation rate in Wamp Soda is like 3 times the annual precip rate. And so we're getting a lot of re-evaporation right after that precip occurs. Elemental sulfur did not do very well. Part of its activation process is microbial, and so if you have low microbial activities in the soil, it's not going to really be effective at leaching sodium. And then again, back to gypsum being slightly insoluble, we think that with a couple more years, it will be completely soluble and leaching more sodium. So soil comp studies in the literature aren't necessarily field applicable results. You definitely need to look at these amendments under field conditions that are harsh, like Wamp Soda, with low rainfall and very high evaporation in the summer. And it's just something to think about, that trade-off between lanthanide treatments, which do improve soil structure. And in another study, we saw it leached more sodium than other treatments. But it is increasing EC, and that is going to be, you know, increasing osmotic stress to germinating seedlings. And so you have to sort of balance, maybe in the short term, to make some trade-offs. And so the grand finale, we saw some initial, you know, results of these treatments improving soil properties, but we definitely need several more average precip years, or maybe one or two really above average precip years for things to take effect. And then I really like this paper by Harris, and I think it was Science, and he just talks about you're starting with an undeveloped soil after disturbance, and you got to give it some time to, you know, skip some successional steps with things like amendments and, yeah, just keeping things in perspective of what we're trying to do. So, with that, that's it.
Do we have any questions from this day?
Yeah. So when we did hydraulic conductivity, we did some in the native and then did some in the disturbed well pad. I think they sort of try to combat compaction by tilling after they reapply the soil and stuff like that. And so, we didn't look too much about the mechanical processes that they use. We just sort of, you know, this is a standard industry practice that they have where they strip soil and then place it and till it. So we were just trying to evaluate existing practices and the effects it has on soil properties. But, yeah.
Any other questions for us? If not, let's go to the next one.